in the web space, then we have a whole bunch of new stuff that we're...
Yeah, so let's talk about some of that new stuff. I'll let you...
Yeah, well, some of the big things that we're doing right now in ASP.NET, there's sort of kind of three levels of improvements that we're delivering kind of over the next couple months. One is a couple of features that we're doing for ASP.NET Ajax that basically add better support for history management. Back forward button integration in the browser.
Yep.
When you're using either client-side script or if you're just using like the update panel and update progress-based controls on the server side.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're doing a bunch of new features there that will roll in to ASP.NET ship a preview to. We've actually already shipped a preview with the extensions released in December.
Exactly. You know,
we'll talk more about that at Mix in terms of updates, but some improvements there that you can take advantage of. We're working on a new project we call the ASP.NET Dynamic Data Project, which basically kind of allows you to very quickly build data-driven apps and data-driven sites. It allows you to kind of create either a link to SQL or link to entities data model. You can add your validations to it. You can use VS 2008 to do all of that very quickly, very easily.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can basically create a new site using the dynamic data framework. And rather than you have to build all of the pages to do the UI to integrate with it, it'll out of the box provide kind of default scaffolding UI that you can use.
Mm-hmm.
You automatically get UI against that data model that you created. And then you have the ability to go in and actually customize what each page looks like. So you can use the out of the box and just get built-in UI with no code. You can copy some templates that are provided as part of the dynamic data project.
Sure.
And then go in and actually tweak it further if you want to. But the benefit is things like foreign key, primary key relationship, linkages between different tables inside a database, default editing views.
Right, when you're in edit view, you get the nice drop-down.
Yeah.
Instead of a primary key, you actually say, the description.
Yeah, so by default, if you have a primary key, let's say products and categories, and you say, let's edit this product, rather than say category ID equals 1, 2, 3, you'll have a category column, and when in edit mode, by default, it'll actually give you a drop-down list.
Sure.
And so you can just pick it and go. What's nice, though, is you can go in and customize all of the defaults.
Right.
As well as going and templatize each of it. So it's a great way where, it's not designed for every application out there, but for a bunch of, simple data-driven apps, which is probably about 80% of what we all build, and you say, gosh, I want to create a data model, I want to get some UI up and going, I want that UI to be extensible, so I'm not painting myself into a corner.
Sure.
So the dynamic data framework isn't just a kind of one-time wizard thing. It's really designed so that as your data model changes or as requirements grow, you can easily add to it using the ASP.NET post-spec model, controls model that people know today, and easily customize it. Because it's not going directly against your database, but it's instead going against a link to SQL or link to entities data model,
right.
You can also add business logic and validation logic at your entity level layer. It's sort of a cleaner model and going directly against the database.
Right.
And you can evolve it. So, I expect some people will use dynamic data for their entire app. I expect some people to use dynamic data to get started and get their app up and running and then eventually customize everything. And then some people will say, I want complete control over it and, choose not to use it. That's fine,
sure.
Too. But I think it gives you a lot of options when doing data-driven apps.
And is this what was Blink? Did Blink evolve into dynamic data, or
Blink
do you consider them different projects? And so people really know as Blink as the rad forms over data.
Right.
And then people that aren't familiar with ASP.NET are familiar with, say, Ruby on Rails and some of the things you mentioned for scaffolding. How would you kind of compare those two? And this is one of the nice things that I love is seeing sort of the rad and sort of the convention over configuration.
Yeah, I think, Blink was the name of a prototype we did and shipped a CTP for.
Mm-hmm.
That basically, it works against link to SQL and basically create a link to SQL data model and then did code generation and created a bunch of pages that worked against it, which is great, and a lot of people really liked it. The only downside was as your data model changes, you had to rerun the wizard, and you basically had to kind of like delete the page and copy over. And so as you made changes, it wasn't quite as scalable as some people liked. So it's great to get started, but once you got started, you know, you're having to kind of manually update
stuff. It's literally doing code spit, and it's not connected to the data model.
It was connected to the data model, but it was doing kind of one-way code spit.
Okay.
And what we're trying to do with dynamic data was add a little bit more runtime smarts, so that rather than have to generate quite so much code, we could actually have some runtime components that participate a little bit more integrated in the process. And so that way you could actually change your data model on the fly and just hit refresh in your app, and it just worked. And you didn't need to actually rerun the wizard or take the changes, modifications you'd made and figure out how to integrate them. You know, you could integrate them a little bit more way, and you weren't left with a project that had, you know, hundreds of lines of code that you didn't write. You know, it was much sort of cleaner and had fewer lines. So we learned a lot from Blink and incorporated a lot of those ideas.
Mm-hmm.
You can kind of think of dynamic data as kind of an evolution of that.
Okay.
And then the third big project kind of we're working on is a model view controller framework for ASP.NET. So we call it ASP.NET MVC.
Mm-hmm.
And this is basically, it deeply integrates with ASP.NET. So it uses, you know, a lot of the standard features people already know. Authentication, caching, configuration, security, authorization, etc. At the runtime layer level. And then it also uses ASPX and ASCX files for what we call the views. So in other words, helping generate the HTML. But it inverts the kind of traditional web model a little bit on its head in that instead of a URL mapping to an ASPX file, URLs map to what are called controller classes,
mm-hmm.
which are just standard classes that don't have any UI-specific code in them. They get first crack on a request. That, you know, map incoming URLs to parameters inside methods. They do their business logic, they interact with a database or a data model, and then ultimately when they're done, they take bundle up the data to render and then call the view components, which are the ASPX or ASCX page, and says, render this.
Okay.
So it's much stricter separation between kind of your application logic and your HTML rendering logic. And for testing purposes, that gives you a lot of hooks so that you can do much better unit testing within your application.
On the controller level, the page or having to instantiate pages and doing things at
that
level.
So for example, instead of having to do kind of write a test that's actually doing web requests to a server,
mm-hmm.
you can instantiate a class as a class and do in-memory unit tests directly against it without having to have ASP.NET even running on the box.
Right.
And so that enables kind of a much better, what we call test-driven development model.
Sure.
Where you can actually sometimes write your tests before you actually write your implementation. So you'd write the tests, verify that it's failing, write the actual implementation, rerun the test, verify that it's passing.
Mm-hmm.
The ASP.NET MVC model supports that. And then for people, there's always been a certain class of web developers who don't like the traditional ASP.NET server control postback model.
Page life cycle. Now, do you see these things as coexisting, or one is going to take over the other, or it really
no,
is
it's definitely coexisting?
A developer gets to choose which model they prefer, and mm-hmm. and how do they interlink, if you will?
Yeah, no, it definitely coexisting. MVC is definitely not replacing the traditional ASP.NET postback model. It's an alternative option. You know, the same way VB and C Sharp are two options. You know, people care passionately about one or the other. and with things like that, there isn't a right option or a one true option. Mm-hmm. The reality is it really depends on your particular preferences, your particular background, and also the projects that you're working on. You know, if you want to build a site that is very heavily optimized for SEO, for search engines, where you want complete control over your URLs.
URL rewriting and mapping.
Yeah,
URLs.
Those types of scenarios. If you want to use test-driven development where you're writing your tests first, where you're unit testing everything, you know, and or you are someone who you know, doesn't want abstractions for your HTML, who like wants to write a for loop to generate its the HTML output, and finds that not, you know, messy compared to a data grid, but hey, I can get down to the raw essence and I can control every attribute and every line of JavaScript that's submitted.
Right, right, right.
The MVC model is probably something that's worth looking at, because you might find that has characteristics that you like.
Sure.
You know, if your goal is, I want to build a line of business app that, you know, supports editing data and kind of a grid-like UI, you know, managing all other, you know, traditional client state and, you know, client interactions for doing sorting, paging, in-place editing, and things like that, you know, with a data grid today is a lot easier than doing it manually. And, you know, the reason why we invented the server control model with ASP.NET was to make a lot of those scenarios much, much easier. And mm-hmm. So, you know, for those people, you know, the existing post-bac server control model, we think, is better. So, you know, this is basically just sort of a reflection of ASP.NET from a market share perspective has gotten so big. And, you know, different parts of our developer base have different preferences, and we want to make sure everyone's got a good option.
Awesome.
So, yeah, it'll be supported together with post-bac. We'll support both models fully going forward. We're still in the CTP phase for the MVC framework.
Right.
We'll have a new MVC refresh, specifically for Mix.
Okay, great.
A bunch of new options, bunch of new feature improvements.
Can you give us a feature? Something that'll make developers smile?
Keep an eye on my blog. I'll be talking about some of them
Ooh,
soon.
Yeah. Oh, close.
You know, lots of improvements in terms of the way routing works in MVC. Lots of improvements to make testing even better. Based on, you know, compared to, say, the first tech preview, there were a few edge cases that we didn't make as testable as we'd like. You'll see much more improvements there.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of just sort of feature requests and kind of responding to feature feedback. And then you'll also hopefully see the first release of kind of the VS tool support for it. And so a bunch of features.
Okay. And that'll come out in Mix.
Yeah.
Okay.
And work with VS 2008. So
great.
Your existing VS 2008, you can download this option. I think definitely a lot of web developers will be interested in that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So lots of improvements there on the ASP.NET side. On the client side, Mix is traditionally more of a web and user interface conference.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see emphasis on the desktop side, you know, in particular with WPF and Expression.
Sure.
Which really gives you the option to build kind of the richest possible desktop client applications.
And this is one of the things that I've certainly seen change since, the 2001 days where we were really about developers, is this designer developer. So do you want to talk about some of those things and where you see the Expression products going and sort of the how we've drank in the Kool-Aid, if you will, for UX?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we shipped WPF with Windows Vista last year. And then we shipped an update of WPF as part of the .NET 3.5 release.
Mm-hmm.
And we added a bunch of improvements in the 3.5 release, better data binding support, click-once support when using Firefox browsers, XBAP support inside Firefox.
Obviously
link. We did special link to XML and link data binding support in WPF. And a bunch of other improvements.
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk even more over the next couple weeks and months about a number of improvements we're making to WPF, specifically around performance and loading time and working set improvements with client apps in general for .NET, but also mm-hmm. specifically for WPF, as well as a bunch of graphics improvements that we're making and new features of WPF that we're going to be rolling out later this year. Benefit as a developer, you know .NET, you know WPF with .NET 3.5, you know, your apps just keep getting better and better. You don't have to learn a whole bunch of new APIs to do it.
Sure.
And obviously, as part of the VS 2008 release, one of the big things we did was add WPF project support inside Visual Studio.
Right.
And so now you can say file new WPF application. We have a WYSIWYG designer, XAML IntelliSense engine, and you know, project build support for building WPF, and then we have Expression. So we kind of view Visual Studio obviously as kind of a developer-focused tool. One of the things that we're really spending a lot of time on, both in the web space and the desktop space and in the Silverlight space, is how does how do developers using VS and how do designers using Expression work together on the same projects?
Sure.
And so, with Expression, the great thing is you can open up a project created with VS. Likewise, VS can open up a project created with Expression. And you can have designers and developers work together as part of the same application. And we spent a lot of time with WPF in terms of really looking hard at that kind of designer-developer workflow. So all the controls in WPF, for example, are what we call templated. So a designer can go in and say, I don't want the button to look like traditional push button. I want to customize it in a rich way.
Mm-hmm.
They can do that without having to write any code.
Right.
And they have the hooks necessary at the runtime layer level to really tweak and customize and kind of perfect what the user experience looks like. So, that's right there. You'll hear probably more. You'll hear more at Mix about our Expression tool plans going forward, as well as kind of some great improvements we're making at WPF.
So I'm a fan of Expression Blend,
mm-hmm.
for designing WPF. Any plans to have sort of that design experience for the entrepreneurs or the one dev shop that is both the designer, the developer, the IT admin, to have the Expression Blend experience in Visual Studio 2008, or you see them as separation of church and state, if you will?
You're certainly going to see more and more integration going forward between the two. And so, more and more features will work in both tools.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting in the sense of, there are definitely a lot of people that are one-man shops. And that's one reason why we'll do a lot of code sharing between the two,
mm-hmm.
So that you can just buy one tool and get them both. We've also, as part of MSDN, if you have an MSDN premium account now, it comes with actually both Blend and Visual Studio.
Which is awesome.
Yeah, so you can actually buy just MSDN and you get everything. One of the things that we are trying to be a little careful of is not turning Blend into a developer tool.
Right.
Which is, hard. Our DNA is often, developer focused, and probably a lot of people watching this video are developers, and they're like, wow, add a debugger into Blend, add,
yeah, exactly,
add refactoring support, code refactoring. those are great for developers. The challenge is if you go into a designer shop or you try to hire a top designer to work on your WPF application. Features like a debugger and features like code refactoring, are not only features they don't use, but they're features that really freak them out.
Right.
Like, oh my God, what am I doing? And what we really tried to do with Expression was have an experience that felt very natural to a designer.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have a traditional toolbox like VS where we list every control. It's the tool palette is much more like Photoshop.
Sure.
We don't have the traditional property grid where, we outline everything. We have palette windows that feel much more akin to a graphical design tool.
Right.
And, we're trying to really make sure that the experience, it's not just about removing features, but it's really about designing the aesthetic of the app itself and prioritizing the features that designers feel really natural and comfortable with and very productive with.
Yeah. The productivity and complexity, like the animations, is one of my favorite mm-hmm. features, where you can just start a keyframe and mm-hmm. say, button, go over here, and it just works. And
yeah.
The developer at the end of the day is probably going to want to go through and look
yeah.
at the code gen,
yeah.
but the designer never will.
Yeah, and you'll see us adding some code editing features into Blend.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you want to write some code in Blend, it'll get a bunch richer there. You also see us add more design features into VS. So you are going to see code sharing and scenario sharing. But at the same time, we are still trying to make sure that our Expression suite, feels first and foremost very comfortable to a designer and have a designer say, this was clearly built with designers in mind. And likewise for Visual Studio, we want to make sure it feels very natural to a developer.
Right.
And have them sit down and say, gosh, this feels like the ultimate development tool. And then again, make sure that you can have both projects open at the same time in Blend and in VS. Share the same project system. Have people be able to make changes in one or the other, you know, and have them work together at the same time as part of a project. That kind of workflow we think is super critical. And whether that workflow is the same person just using two different tools, or whether that's actually, you know, two different people, you know, a developer and a designer that is either part of their team or someone that they've outsourced to.
Right, right.
And are contracted with. You know, have that workflow work great.
Sure.
Yeah.
Cool.
So lots of improvements in the desktop space, and then, you'll hear a lot of noise around Silverlight.
Yeah. So what is this Silverlight you speak of?
Yeah, no one's ever heard of that. We basically used Mix last year. So Mix last year was sort of April 30th and early May to kind of announce Silverlight and sort of talk a little bit about a roadmap and our strategy with Silverlight.
Mm-hmm.
We shipped version 1 of Silverlight in September of last year, and version 1 was very much focused on media scenarios.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it wasn't a application platform. It was really focused on you want to play media and integrate media into your site. We delivered really high-quality video runtime to do that.
Sure.
Silverlight 2.0, which will ship later this year, is really focused on RIA scenarios, or rich internet application scenarios. And so it is much more of a, you know, it'll have lots and lots of media improvements, but it is, you know, I think I'd say for most people watching this problem in Channel 9, you know, it is a, first and foremost, a big developer application platform. Really kind of gives you a basis for building rich applications that run inside the browser. You'll hear a lot more at Mix specifically around, you know, as a .NET developer, you know, how you take advantage of that. And then also as a designer, you know, how do you target that and really make it sing?
Yeah, so I've certainly been really excited about Silverlight 2.0 as a .NET developer. Why don't you talk about some of the things that, developers are familiar with, maybe ASP.NET developers or WPF developers, and what are the things that they're familiar with that are now going to be in Silverlight 2.0 that they have sort of expectations of programming models, expectations of UX, expectations of runtime?
Sure. Well, I think one of the things that we did with Silverlight is we include a cross-platform version of the .NET framework within it. And so we include a CLR, we include a core set of base class libraries like MSCoreLib, so collections, generics, I/O, all that good stuff. We include a lot of the core libraries, Link,
mm-hmm.
The networking stack, XML stack.
Let's actually talk about the networking stack, because this is one of the pains that people run into, say, JavaScript, is the cross-domain, where somebody wants to make a cross-domain call and they don't have the right security context, so they either have to build their own proxy in ASP.NET, and that stuff's just going to be built into Silverlight 2.0?
Yep. Yeah, so we basically, one of the things that we've done with Silverlight is made it a compatible subset of the full .NET framework. So the full .NET framework today is, hundreds of, I think the full thing is like 100 megabytes. Silverlight's obviously much, much smaller.
Can you talk about the size, by the way?
We'll keep that a secret.
Okay, yeah.
All right. We're feeling good about the size. But,
okay, smaller than 100 megs.
That's... Yes, it is smaller than 100 megs. Smaller even than 99 megs. we really designed Silverlight. One of the core tenets of Silverlight, obviously, is cross-platform. The other core tenet is you got to be able to get it on the machine, quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And that means, not in a minute, not in 30 seconds, but much faster.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that kind of, I spend a lot of time on is, driving the size down and, really holding people's feet to the fire in terms of writing the tightest possible code in terms of download size, but also in terms of performance. So we spent a lot of time focusing on that and feel pretty good about where we'll be with Silverlight 2.0 on that.
Excellent.
But also, everything that we've added, we've designed to be compatible with the full .NET framework. So going back to your question about cross-domain networking, we have a system.NET namespace in Silverlight 2.0. You look at the APIs in there, you look at the APIs in the full .NET framework, and they're the same. So we have, like a web client API, mm-hmm. just like there is in .NET. that does HTTP. We also have kind of a lower-level HTTP set of APIs for doing HTTP requests.
And RESTian, anything specific for REST requests?
We have REST, we have WCF, and ASMX client endpoints for web services. Obviously, REST support, as well as just raw HTTP support.
Okay.
And that does all work cross-domain. So it does require a server to put a policy file to indicate that it support that it's going to allow cross-domain just for security reasons.
Okay.
But it means that unlike JavaScript today, where if you know you can only call back to the server that the JavaScript was downloaded from,
right?
You can now call off to other servers, and that opens up a ton of possibilities in terms of calling services on the internet, and still doing the secure way, but allowing you to, call remote things and take advantage of it. So,
sure.
You'll see us talk about some interesting scenarios and things you can do there. And again, the great thing is, if you know .NET today, you know how to do networking today, whether it's with the raw HTTP classes, whether it's with WCF, you can reuse the same skills, the same code, just recompile.
Mm-hmm.
On the UI layer perspective, so, it's great to be able to grab data. Obviously, how do I work with it and present it? Sort of like 2.0, the bits that we'll be talking a lot more about at Mix, is a much richer UI control framework than the previous alpha that we shipped.
Mm-hmm.
I think people that had looked at the 1.1 alpha that we shipped, conceptually shipped really kind of last May at Mix last year, saw a API that looked like WPF at the graphics layer, but didn't have all the higher level features. So there was a way to build controls, but there was no concept of layout management or data binding or
styles
or templates or list controls or form input controls. And data binding? Yeah, data binding, yeah. And so all of those features are now in Silverlight 2.0. So, if you are an ASP.NET developer or WinForms developer, and especially a WPF developer, it will feel very natural where you can go ahead and drop, text box, button, checkbox, slider, you name it, toggle button controls on the form.
Right.
And program against them in the controls way. You can use layout controls like grid and stack. So mm-hmm. that you can position those controls on the page, and as the browser resizes, it flows cleanly and isn't hard coded in terms of the pixel coordinates.
Right.
If you want to data bind, CLR objects to display lists of content, you can use the templating feature at WPF in order to use data binding expressions to express that cleanly.
And will I have tool support for data binding there?
You might. Yeah. Who knows?
Oh, wow! All right.
We will have some tool support that we'll be shipping as well, it kind of makes us exactly, what we present and talk about. But who knows what will be there? the nice thing is it's basically a compatible subset of WPF. So if you're a WPF developer today, mm-hmm. building desktop apps or Windows apps. You'll sit down and find Silverlight 2.0 very, very familiar. The properties, methods, events, the syntax, the code, the API, mm-hmm. In Silverlight 2.0, all of that, everything that's in Silverlight 2.0 from an API perspective works the same in full WPF. So it's still a subset, but it's a much bigger subset than probably a lot of people were imagining, and it lets you build really powerful apps.
Now, this is probably a stupid question, but when I look at ASP.NET server controls, one of the great things they did was smart rendering. For example, if a client didn't have JavaScript turned on, it would emit a certain HTML. Otherwise, it would emit another. And we saw that as well with some of the old mobile controls. If I'm an ASP.NET developer, are you looking to do, potentially, if I sniff the client, actually sending a richer experience, like instead of an ASP.NET data grid, sending a dynamic Silverlight data grid to the client and actually doing callbacks using some combination of, say, AJAX and, .NET code on the client itself instead of on the server?
Those are scenarios that we are, thinking about. We shipped as part of the ASP.NET extensions in December CTP a couple of ASP.NET controls that use Silverlight.
Okay.
And so specifically ones that one that uses media, and then and for, you know, very focused on media scenarios, and then more, one that's more of a generic Silverlight hosting control.
Okay.
The media one's kind of cool in the sense of it gives you a full server programming model for doing media scenarios. So on the server, you can add playlists, you can add chapters and markers inside your video.
Mm-hmm.
The design surface inside VS gives you the skinning approach and skinning capabilities for the control. And you know, it just basically makes adding video to your site dead easy.
Okay.
You know, all with ASP Media, I think is the name of the control that we support. And so you're definitely, you know, you'll continue to see us do some interesting capabilities like that. And, you know, you'll also see us allow you to expose ASP.NET application services, things like membership, roles, personalization, and very easily consume it inside a Silverlight app as well. So, you know, it doesn't require you to use ASP.NET on the back end with Silverlight, but obviously if you do, there's lots of integration benefits that you get with it.
Excellent, excellent. So will we see some high-level controls, or how about the Ajax control toolkit, which is some stuff? Are you looking to do what I'd call probably out-of-band releases for different types of controls and scenarios? Because there seem to be a lot of really sort of rich ones. Yeah, exactly. So like the rating control, for example.
Yep. And yeah, it's I think one of the things that's exciting about Silverlight, and for WPF as well, is the richness with which it gives you in terms of developing controls.
Mm-hmm.
If you think about for ASP.NET, you know, when we're building controls, you know, HTML is super rich and flexible from a UI perspective, and JavaScript is fairly malleable and lets you do lots of things. But you know, the browser didn't really design the HTML tree for composition and encapsulation.
Mm-hmm.
So when you output a tag, you're putting it in the same tree that all the other tags on the page are. And when you output a script, it's running in the same script namespace as all the other scripts are. So there's a lot of work as a control developer you need to do in order to get, you know, a calendar control nicely encapsulated.
Sure, sure.
In the WinForm space...
Now, just one thing there. If I remember correctly, calendar control. Did you actually build one of the first ASP.NET calendar controls? Are you speaking from experience as writing your own pre-render and the HTML spit there?
Yeah, going back year, you know, like 10 years or 11 years.
These are the rumors that we hear that it was, you know, it was on some flight, and by the time you landed, you had it done.
Yeah, calendar control is interesting for ASP.NET because it's deceptively hard as to all the support, you know, and it's a great example of kind of for the post-spec model, a lot of the challenges and a lot of the things that we did in order to enable it. The classic problem is like, you know, how do you select a date? How do you page back and forth between dates? How do you mm-hmm. flip into month mode versus day mode?
Right.
You know, how do you stylize and templatize what each cell looks like? You know, once you start going into all those types of scenarios, there's a lot of actual controls infrastructure you need to enable. And doing a calendar by hand, especially if it doesn't support JavaScript
mm-hmm.
Or doesn't support Ajax, which, you know, when we built the first calendar control in ASP.NET, you know, browsers for the most part back in IE3, IE4 days didn't really support JavaScript well at all.
Right.
You know, that's hard to do and manage yourself. So, calendar is an interesting example. You know, if you think about Windows Forms, you know, Windows Forms has had a calendar control since the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
It actually just uses the Windows control. But, you know, Windows Forms gives you more support for building controls because, you know, it's running in a completely managed .NET environment on the client. But at the same time, when you're drawing pixels on the screen, you are still somewhat constrained by user and GDI in terms of what Windows lets you do.
Right.
So you can build sometimes richer UI, but, for example, if you want to rotate the calendar, you know, 45 degrees, or you want to skew it, or you want to go ahead and layer it with Z ordering on top of different things, you know, existing Win32 APIs and GDI.
You don't want to have to graphics G equals new graphic and do, you know, own your own graphics as opposed to having
harder than you'd expect in terms of doing some of those effects.
Right.
And, you know, so that also places limits. Both WPF, that's for full desktop apps in .NET, as well as the WPF that's in Silverlight, are kind of provide a nice high, you know, a nice model in the sense of it gives you the richness of the controls model because it's all .NET based.
Mm-hmm.
That you know you might be familiar with from the Windows Form side or the ASP.NET side of the server, but it uses a much richer graphics model that is what we call vector graphics based.
Sure.
And so rather than say you know draw you know this control on the screen and use the underlying Windows calls. We basically draw, you know, shape objects on the screen using kind of a vector graphics API.
Right.
And the benefit with that is it means that you can do much richer composition and customization of what that UI looks like.
You don't hit the ceiling.
Yeah, you can do z-ordering simple, you know, by just setting a z-order property on any object. You can rotate or transform or skew any of the UI. You can wire up animation states.
Mm-hmm.
We support the notion we call templates, which means that you can say, I want to customize what each cell looks like, and I have a nice way that I can put custom controls inside that, you know, calendar cell to customize it. And, you know, all those types of features mean that from a control developer's perspective, you can build much richer controls than you can build either in WinForms or in ASP.NET. And from a control consumer perspective, so as the developer using a calendar control, you actually have much more richer customization capabilities where if you don't like what the control looks like or how its UI behaves, you can go in and tweak it without having to write your own control or you know copy-paste the code and modify it.
Right, right.
And for a designer, it means also that a design tool like Blend can go in and take the calendar and say, let's actually tweak it in the designer without the designer having to write any code.
Right, right.
So that kind of power and richness means that the controls model is, you know, I think the richest, pretty much the richest of any UI framework I know of. You know, if you compare it, you know, the Windows, Win32, WinForms, ASP.NET, you know, Flash Flex, Swing, Cocoa, I mean, if you look at kind of all the type popular UI frameworks out there, I think the WPF Silverlight one is the probably the richest from a developer and designer extensibility perspective.
Right.
And that's going to allow us to crank out controls like crazy. So yeah, you'll see a lot more higher level controls start to appear.
So it was a lot harder when you had to create your control. The kids these days have it a lot easier.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, have it easy. and also, you know, hopefully it means that, you know, as that this whole ecosystem sprouts up, you know, part of what we try to do with .NET and VS is kind of create what we call an ecosystem where, mm-hmm. you know, lots of developers use .NET. That means that control vendors and developers, you know, open source developers say, yeah, I can build a control and share it and know that I can, if you're a control vendor, I can sell it to hundreds of thousands of people or millions of developers.
If right.
an open source guy, put it on a blog post, get tens of thousands of downloads. And having that virtuous cycle means more developers actually start using .NET, which means that control vendors can make more money, open source control developers get more usage, and you kind of get that cycle going, which actually causes...
Builds the ecosystem.
Yeah, which builds the ecosystem. And so, you know, I think you're going to see with Silverlight WPF in 2008, this calendar year, that ecosystem really get pumped up and go to the next level.
So another part of the ecosystem, this is kind of, I'd say, a little bit of a curveball, but it's advertising. As a sort of ecosystem, and what things are we doing to enable, you know, either the startup or other companies to think about different ways to monetize their application? Okay. Do you want to talk about some of the things that Silverlight's doing there and kind of where you see that going?
Well, I think, I mean, one of the things that's interesting, once you can do cross-domain network access so that you can call to, say, an ad server or a, you know, ad repository provided by Google, DoubleClick, Microsoft, mm-hmm. Yahoo, eBay, Amazon, whoever. You know, once you can get data, and once you have a really rich UI platform that you can actually embed custom UI in a rich way, you know, you can start to open up interesting ad opportunities. And so, you know, you could, for example, build a RIA application, and then depending on how the developer is working with it, you know, if they're looking up information about flights or looking up information about music, you know, you could, in theory, you know, provide UI that you control and you customize inside the application to say, oh, you know, you want to buy, you know, this music, or you want to learn more about this music, or go this trip, you know, click here. And that click here, you know, that UI, again, you can control, but you can get some of that information from, you know, third-party services and do some kind of revenue sharing with them. And so, you know, I think the market is still pretty new in that area. And it's a little bit the Wild West still, in terms of, you know, standards and in terms of scenarios and in terms of, you know, monetization models. But I do think that, that having kind of the richness of a RIA platform is going to get more interesting for business models like that, that can kind of bootstrap themselves with advertising or potentially be completely self-sufficient through advertising.
Yeah, so look at the holistic, so developers all the way to how we actually go ahead and make money on whatever the killer app is.
Yeah, it's certainly Silverlight. I mean, Silverlight doesn't have, you know, a built-in, you know, ad thing that you have to use, or even one that you can use. You know, so it isn't, you know, there is no, like, hidden thing that you have to use, some kind of specific ad thing. But it means that, you know, people can, partners can go ahead and, you know, easily offer ad-based services, and as a developer, you have the choice as to, you know, whether you consume one or how you consume it. And, you know, again, it's still pretty early days in terms of how those revenue models shake out, but I think you'll find the core platform that's in Silverlight is going to give you some richness there that, that opens up opportunities.
Cool. Yeah. Okay. So we talked about a lot of stuff going all from the back end all the way to servers, desktop, web, RIA, anything else that, that you think is going to be really cool for developers at Mix that they're going to want?
Well, I think, I mean, I think the fun
you
want to
drop a couple hints on things here?
Oh, yeah, we'll hopefully have
teasers,
few surprises up our sleeves. You know, I think the cool thing about Mix is this year in particular is, you know, one is just the sheer amount of cool stuff coming out. You know, whether you're building a server-based app, whether you're building, you know, internal data, whether you're building kind of Web 2.0, you know, SEO-friendly app, you know, we got great stuff for you. If you're a hoster or you're an enterprise data center, we got great stuff for you to talk about. If you're building desktop apps, we got great stuff to talk about. You're doing Ajax, we got great stuff to talk about. If then you're, you know, you want to build kind of RIA-based solutions, I think this Mix in particular has really great stuff to talk about, and, you know, have you leave, you know, armed knowing how to use it and being able to actually start writing code and build solutions with it. And so the cool thing about all that stuff is you'll be able to leave using it.
Does that mean go live license? Is that what I?
Well, we'll have go live licenses for various things.
Okay, all right.
I think. You know, Mix last year, everyone left with bits, and we're able to start building stuff. You know, this year is going to be the same. You're going to leave with bits and being able to build stuff. You're going to see, you know, the maturity of those bits be even further. You know, more things will have RTM'd or shipped, and you know, the CTPs and the betas that we'll be delivering will be even further advanced. And so, you know, I think, you know, purely as a technology perspective, from a technology conference perspective, you know, that makes it exciting. You know, the other thing that I think makes Mix kind of unique amongst conferences is just the whole networking effect. It's an interesting mix of people, no pun intended.
Right.
Where, you know, some are diehard Microsoft shops, some are people that have never used Microsoft technology.
Right.
And, you know, one of the things that we try to do with Mix is blend that a little bit together. There's a lot more panels than you have at, say, a traditional tech ed or PDC conference.
Right.
There's a lot of kind of in the hallway networking kind of like events and opportunities and parties. And so it's a fun, and it's in Vegas, so which, you know, ends up making it kind of just a fun, not just purely from the technology perspective, but from the kind of networking, you know, brainstorming, idea sharing perspective, makes it kind of a more unique event and stuff. And it's a smaller event than, say, some of the bigger conferences, so it's a little bit more of an intimate feel. So it's, if you haven't been to Mix before, it's definitely worth looking at because I think it's one of the best conferences of the year.
Yeah, and this is probably what I'd say is one of the most underrated features is being able to walk up to Scott and, you know, at a party and talk to him about these exact technologies in a sort of informal way.
Yeah. I mean, it's it is definitely more of an informal conference, and just in general, kind of a fun conference.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
It's I'm really looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a great event to go to. If you are thinking about going to it, please register quickly, because every year it sells out, and you can't, once it sells out, they're going, move quickly.
Yeah, there's a $200 discount, I think, for the next couple of days. I think January 31st, the early bird expires. Yeah.
Usually what happens is there's a mad rush for tickets.
Yeah, I think after this video.
if you are thinking, please move quickly if you want to go, because the opportunity might not last much longer. But I think, I think if you do get a chance to go, I think you'll have a good time. And if you don't have a chance to go, we'll obviously be talking about some of this, a lot more of this stuff as well through Channel 9.
And your blog as well.
Yep. Yeah, you'll see a lot more talking about some of those things. So it's, I think 2008 in general for .NET in particular is going to be a fun year. I think with VS 2008, .NET 3.5, we really have, kickstarted the year with a really powerful foundation of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
IS7 coming out shortly, that gets even better. A lot of the WPF improvements coming out gets even better. And then I think with Silverlight, we're kind of completing the overall .NET picture, where between the web, between the desktop, between the RIA space, lots of opportunities. And I think for developers, great way to build solutions.
I think they're going to be salivating. So, yeah. All right. Thanks, Scott. Appreciate your time.
Thanks a bunch.